Hello, welcome to Journey of the Monkey King with myself, Quiver, and my friend MJ.
Hello. The entrance scream is just going to be a thing from now on.
Great.
Ah! Yep.
If you keep making references to it, I can't edit
Well, yeah.
it out.
You're gonna edit out me screaming the rest of the time, so that's I get to keep a couple of little screams.
Yeah, whenever there's any kind of pause, that is just me editing out MJ's constant agonized screams over me having them locked up, forced to go through 100 chapters of this.
It's good to have a little scream. It's good to be recording again. It punctures up the days as I pace in my small cell, in an undisclosed location in the woods.
Yeah. Actually,
There's not a
sorry.
lot of woods in Ireland. Actually, we don't have a lot of wild spaces because we were used as the breadbasket and farmland of a evil colonizing power who destroyed all of our wilderness. So it is actually pretty easy to find me.
Yeah.
But I can't give you the exact location, lest Quiva take away my food privileges again.
God, you reminded me of something I meant to talk to you about before recording, but it's probably fine. I've been very upset about a website shutting down. I've been co-host is a so small little social media website I've been using for a while, and I've been inordinately upset about it shutting down. And it's kind of made me want to just quit all other social media entirely.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Which is also to say that I am honestly like I already deleted my own Twitter account ages and ages ago, but I feel like I can't be arsed maintaining the podcast Twitter account anymore at this point. It didn't get that much use anyway, but still, this is maybe just an official announcement that I was like, that's basically dead. I'm just gonna keep posting the episodes. I enjoy doing this, but I was never trying to like work to hit it big, and I'm not gonna, I can't be arsed to like do social media promotion. It's so draining. I'm sorry.
I should probably actually promote this.
Yeah.
I'll start actually promoting this. I hate social media. I am not doing so much comedy anymore, as I recover from the horrors. It's also quite difficult to do it from the small cell I'm in. And I always said if I quit, I would get rid of all social media. To my friend Keelan, who definitely exists, and I have to say, who definitely exists, has deleted all social media, and he's happy, and that seems peaceful, seems good.
Yeah. But yeah, I am continuing debating whether to leave my other account up at all. But in the meantime, I have a website, and I've set up a fucking old-fashioned manual blog. You can follow it in RSS feed. There is no comments. There is no, not, I just write a blog. I'm going to write a blog post sometimes, and then you can read them. That's all. Fuck you.
That's so nice.
It's
I miss blogs.
oakreef.ie.
I miss blogs so much.
Yeah, it's one of the things that like co-host shutting down has caused a bunch of people on it to just be like, no, fuck this, I'm not going back to Tumblr, I'm not going to fucking Blue Sky. And it's just like I followed like just a dozen people who have just set up or revived blogs because it's they just don't want to go back to.
Oh,
See,
that's lovely.
sorry, this is just going to be me rambling about co-hosts now, but sorry, it was a very nice website. It was basically like if Tumblr had no numbers, so you can't see likes, you can't see follow accounts, you cannot see any numbers of any kind. It was much more pleasant. It was designed not to, it was designed, you know, to not to be nice to use and not to be trying to make you completely addicted in every way to using it and getting numbers as high as possible, and not have like predatory advertising and spying on you and that, which also means it never made any money. It's kind of the pro it's kind of the problem here. Like this is not, it's not surprising that it shut down. They were doing like financial statements every month or two, and like they were never making money. Or like they, sorry, they were never making profit. They had like subscription thing you did get to support it or whatever, but they were never making a profit. And yeah, it's by the time this episode is put out, it will have been turned into read-only mode, and they will be turning the lights off like the end of the year fully.
He's sad.
It
Don't know.
was a nice website.
I actually still kind of like Tumblr a little bit. If you told me 10 years ago that one day I would find Tumblr to be the sanest and most relaxing place on the internet, we are seriously dating ourselves at the moment. We had a whole conversation before recording about aging and the ravages of it, and I don't like it.
One of the signs of aging is now talking about websites you miss.
I just before the whole, I don't, privatization is the wrong word, the corporatization of the internet.
The enclosure of the internet.
The enclosure, yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. When it was kind of, you weren't just giving your data to the same four corporations. There were at least two other corporations you could give your data to. But yeah, have long form blogs where people actually wrote about things they were interested in was cool. I don't know. I personally dislike video also. So
Yeah, fair.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so far, if you read my blog, it is mostly technical posts about how the blog itself works, because I'm a programmer nerd, and I'm doing like a very self-hosted website, kind of building things very manually, and it's fun and interesting to me, but may not be necessarily interesting to people, to other, to everyone.
I am imagining, because again, as I have said, I do very little work for this podcast, and I have not looked at the analytics, but I imagine our demographic
Oh,
is
well, this
maybe
is.
skews towards the people who are interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess. Like, again, I've never been. I like, you know, we set up this, we set up a Twitter account, tried to promote it a bit. We made a Patreon, but I was like, never. I was like, my, so I guess my attitude towards selling out is I would absolutely sell out. Like if
In
there
a
was
heartbeat.
if there was a load of money on the table to like to buy this podcast or whatever. Sure, but also that's not my goal. It's insofar as I'm not like I'm not putting I do not want to like do the grind and effort to try and like push that and promote that happening, because that would kill me. That would like destroy my soul.
Yeah, and I was roped
And
in under the promise of not doing any work because
yes.
at the time I was working a full-time job running a comedy club and trying to gig like 4 nights a week, and that is a good way to die.
Yeah.
So yeah, we should promote the thing. Anyway,
Sorry,
we're here to
I
talk about a monkey, is what
yeah.
we are here to do.
Anyway, yeah. I can't remember what the point of that tangent about selling out was now.
We don't promote this thing, and we probably should, I
Oh
think, is the
that's
point.
basically the gist of it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, people call that, people use the phrase soul destroying for a reason.
We live in a dystopian nightmare.
Trying to
Yeah.
turn your hobby into your job is a good way of making you hate your hobbies.
Monetize your life. It's fine. Make everything
No,
transactional.
just
Every second of joy is a minute of profit.
you can just make a website. You can just make a website with a little RSS feed, and then your friends can read it, and they don't, and you don't have to have metrics. Oh yeah, actually, that's what I was going to say. You asked about metrics for this podcast, and I was just making the point that I never look at them.
Oh, great.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Numbers are out there somewhere, and I don't know. Numbers and I, their business is their own. My business is my own.
Because if I did,
What
I
do
would.
you?
It, yeah, it's because I. Because if I did look at them, I know I would care and I would obsess over that. So I just don't.
This is fair. This is fair.
That way lies poison. Oh yeah, actually, fun thing I figured out how to do, is how to do like chapter markers on podcasts. So I can do I can put a marker here saying this is where we actually start talking about the book.
Yes. Yes. That's good. Good.
So
That is a good feature.
we are on chapter 82. So, if you will recall, Tripitaka has been kidnapped by a monster spirit who wants to fuck him to get immortal from fucking him instead of eating him. It's a bit of a twist on the
Sexually
usual setup.
transmitted immortality.
Yes.
Yes.
I had forgotten about that joke. And the pilgrims have all arrived at the mountain the monster lives on, and Wukong has sent Baji up to investigate. And on the path up the mountain, he runs across two female monsters bailing water out of a well. They have the hair done up in like apparently like a 15-inch bun, it's described
Oh,
as.
wow.
And their hair is adorned with like bamboo strips.
Nice.
The narrator notes this is very unfashionable, actually.
Well, they don't care. They got their own style.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a look in my book.
Yeah, the narrator disagrees. But yeah, Baji calls out to them a greeting, but the greeting he calls out, he calls them monstrous fiends, which they take offense to and start hitting him over the head with poles.
Yo, what up, my demons?
So he didn't bring his rake to defend himself with, so he just runs away and tells Wukong what happened. And Wukong is like, well, yeah, you can't just go up to people and start calling them monstrous fiends. What? Obviously, they beat the shit out of you. What are you doing?
You just oh. There is just no redeeming qualities to this pig.
So Wukong tells him to go back. Tells Baji, okay, transform yourself, go back and sweet talk them a bit. For some more information. So he turns into the appearance of a kind of a young priest and goes up to talk to them. And they're very talkative as long as you don't start the conversation with, "Hey, monstrous fiends." They're getting some.
Just don't open with a slur,
Yeah.
is what I'm hearing here.
Christ, yeah.
This has been social skills with MJ Stokes.
He asked them what they're bailing water for, and they're getting some water for a vegetarian banquet that their mistress is throwing tonight because she's going to marry the Tong monk, who she just abducted.
Fair enough. Well, no, not fair enough, but not respect either. Ooh, okay.
Baji goes back to the group and he's like, "Oh, okay, cancel the pilgrimage. Everyone go home. Tripitaka is getting married. We're done. We're done here." So Wukong is obviously like, "Shut up! Stop doing this. You do this every time." So,
Fair enough. Okay.
yeah,
This has been lovely. I guess we part ways here.
no, they go and follow the two monsters to see where they're bringing the water to, and he Wukong sees them kind of just walk up, to a spot in the mountain, and they just sort of vanish. And the pilgrims search the area to find the cave, but all they find is a huge boulder, which the narrator describes the surface of which has to be over 10 square miles. So miles in this case being a li, which we've discussed before. This works out like assuming like a spherical boulder is like this boulder is like a kilometer across.
Wow.
A big ass boulder.
Full disclosure, Quiva, whenever you start talking about the measurement stuff, I look up tower readings on Instagram. I've got the Emperor today. I need to get back grounded in myself. Anyway,
So
sorry, continue.
do you just look up tarot readings or whichever is like the first result is your card?
Yeah, more or less.
Okay, interesting.
I've run out of other ways to organize my life. Sorry, continue.
They find the boulder is covering a huge pit. It's like hundreds of miles deep. And Wukong tells Baji and Wuxing to guard the entrance, and he's going to go down and rescue Tripitaka. But he inside the cave underground, it's like an entire world in and of itself. There's sunlight, there's trees, there's flowers, there's weather. Don't ask where the
Ooh.
sunlight's coming from. I don't know how this works.
I might marry this demon.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's some nice properties.
yeah, great land or great road frontage,
Yep. Your pit frontage.
great pit frontage. It reminds me of the Water Curtain Cave back home.
Oh.
And inside, he finds the monster's home, and he turns into a fly to sneak inside, and he finds her discussing wedding plans, and eventually he manages to find Tripitaka, whose head he lands on, and starts talking to him. And Tripitaka like begs Wukong to save him, and Wukong decides to have his usual bit of fun. He's going, "Well, you know, I can't. You're about to get married. Like, we can't.
Yeah.
You
Look
can't."
at all this pit
Yeah, you
frontage.
can't break up your happy marriage.
Congratulations. Here's a toaster.
Yeah, Tripitaka asks and said, "I don't want to get married. I wanna we gotta wanna go on the pilgrimage, gotta get those fucking scriptures. I'm not getting married, get me the fuck out of here."
I mean, yeah, there's pilgrimage, but you know, you could walk for another 10 years and keep falling off your horse or pit frontage.
Pit frontage. So Wukong has a plan to subdue the demon without a straight up fight. So he's going to go for his classic that he's developed, which is sneak into her mouth and shred her organs from the inside.
Yeesh.
So he says at the banquet, when the monster wants to dr the monster is going to like want to have a drink and a toast with you because you're her fiance. So you pour some wine for her, but do it intentionally badly so it bubbles up a lot. And Wukong is going to hide inside one of the bubbles, so when he drinks it, he'll sneak into her stomach. Tripitaka thinks this sounds pretty inhumane, but it doesn't take that much convincing to get him to go along with it.
Yeah, it's not a nice way to go, but also you've just been abducted, so I get it.
So after a while, the monster shows up, and she basically just throws herself at Tripitaka, starts like cuddling him, whispering in his ear, trying to seduce him, and Wukong decides to just watch and see and see to see will he actually do
This is troubling, but
it.
also, this is stag do behavior, to be fair. All that's missing is like shirts with nipples on them or and someone dressed like a bear who has suddenly just had a revelation. That's one stag do that we once had in Hysteria.
Interesting.
I don't know why the guy was dressed in a bear costume. I know definitely because that he was really enjoying the bear costume because he was really drunk and would not stop telling us. I hope he's well.
I hope he got a nice fursuit.
Yeah.
But yeah, he is not swayed to break his vows. She drags him out to this banquet eventually, where she has actually prepared a vegetarian feast for him. Unlike like
That's
us,
considerate.
so like unlike some other monsters who have like, yes, have this veget have this red bean paste. It's definitely not made of brains. This is actually a vegetarian feast for him.
It's so nice to go somewhere and not just have one option on the menu, you know?
She does like ply him with some wine, and he is like, up until this point in the pilgrimage, he has let the disciples drink like vegetarian wine at feasts and that, but he has avoided it himself. But he doesn't feel like he's really able to do that here. He's like, oh God, I guess I just have to drink this. Fuck. So,
No matter what, Tripitaka, this does not count as a free lapse.
yeah, so he, when she gives him wine, he like takes it, he like drips, he like dips his fingers into it, like sprays a bit of it, out into the wind and kind of says a little prayer, basically praying, God, I hope this is actually vegetarian. And Wukong like flies
I
as
love that that's his concern right now.
Wukong as a fly like flies into his ear and like walks him through drinking it.
Aww.
And yeah, so then he like, mess goes through with the plan of messily pouring it so Wukong as a fly can hide in the bubbles. But instead of drinking it straight away, she proposes a toast to Tripitaka, which gives all the bubbles time to pop. And when she goes to drink it, she just sees Wukong, flip. She sees like Wukong as a fly sitting on the wine, and she goes to like grab him and shoo him away from the wine. Wukong, realizing his plan has not worked, turns into a hawk and flies away, just knocking over tables and like food all over the place as he goes.
Oh, worked
Yeah.
so hard on that piece.
Yeah. She was being kind of considerate for this like forced marriage ceremony and getting him back actual
Yeah,
vegetarian food, I
you're right.
guess.
It's still assault. Still very much assault. Still a crime.
Yeah, he flies back to Wujing and Baji, and he gives them just kind of an update on the situation before heading back down into the cave. And he finds Tripitaka again, and he's like, "Okay, new plan. You get the monster to go take a walk with you in the back garden. There's a peach tree there I saw.
Oh.
It's fine, don't worry about the peaches.
I'm gonna worry about the peaches.
There will be like a single red peach on the tree, which will be me transformed. So you go up and pick the red one, and then when she goes up to pick her own fruit, you insist on like romantically swap trading fruits with her so that she'll eat the one that you picked, which is me, and then when she tries to eat it, I will jump into her stomach. He's very determined to go to with the stomach plan.
He tends to default to that a lot in a way that's becoming a bit suspect.
Yeah, he didn't do this early on. This is something he's kind of settled into more in more recent years, I guess.
I'm still getting a bit of the author's barely disguised fetish off of this, I'm not gonna lie.
Perhaps Wu Chengyan was into Vor. Who can say?
Who can say?
Tripitaka does ask him, "Why don't you just fight her head on?" And Wukong is like, "Well, this cave is kind of confusing to navigate, and I like to have an exit strategy,
Okay,
and
fair.
I
Yeah.
don't trust my ability to like successfully flee to safety if things turn badly. So I don't wanna, and she has an army down here, so I don't want to just like take them all on without some easy means of escape."
Fair.
So yeah, Tripitaka tells the monster that I had a cold the other day. I'm still kind of recovering. Let's go for a nice like relaxing stroll. The garden's very beautiful. There's poems, etc., etc. And cut to the chase. The very specific plan of the peach tree works. Wukong ends up in her stomach and proceeds to bait the shit out of her organs. And she screams and screams and then goes quiet, and Wukong thinks he might have accidentally killed her, but she starts calling for help.
This was not the point. The point was not to kill her.
He wants to subdue her. He doesn't necessarily want to kill her if he doesn't have to.
That's fair. That's surprisingly merciful for Wukong.
I think he particularly doesn't want to kill her in front of Tripitaka.
Oh.
Yeah, she calls for help from like her minions and tells them to grab Tripitaka. But Wukong says, no, don't lay. Wukong shouts out from like inside her, don't lay a hand on him. If you leave him go, we'll spare you. And so she kind of says, all right. And she picks Tripitaka up on her back, and they all start heading towards the entrance.
Oh dear.
And that is this chapter.
Well, I hope the vegetarian food was nice. None of that roast cauliflower shite. There's really no nutrition in that.
Is there not? I quite like cauliflower.
Yeah, but people tend to serve it as like an alternative to meat.
Yeah.
It's not a complete dish. There's no real protein in that. No. And you can do a lot with cauliflower. Nothing against the vegetable, but there's not a lot to it, you know?
I don't cook it. I like cauliflower, but I don't cook it much because I like to make, batches of stuff and then have them in the fridge, and cauliflower does not keep well. It is
No.
goes rotten really quick after you cook it.
But if you're ever there's an umi in Cork, right?
Yeah, there's an umami falafel in Cork.
Yeah. If you ever go there, they have really good cauliflower fritters with a tahini and pomegranate sauce.
That does sound really nice.
It's really, really good. Bit spenny for umi in particular, but they're good, and you're supporting a Palestinian business. I'm hungry now.
Hi.
Hey.